I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. So, this week, a little less exciting than last week's episode, which is a given, because last week I had to cover a month's worth of information, and this week it's a week where Blake Snell didn't sign, Bellinger didn't sign, it was arbitration week, or arbitration deal week at least, people figuring out their deals beforehand, so I'm going to touch on that in a minute, but I also want to discuss real quick. It was also the IFA signing period opening this week, a couple days ago. And I don't really have much to say about these kids. I mean, they signed Vladdy Guerrero, not that Vladdy Guerrero, the other Vladdy Guerrero, son of Vladimir Guerrero, obviously. The Blue Jays' Vladdy Guerrero, this is so confusing. The Blue Jays' Vladdy Guerrero's younger brother. And what I want to say about this is the IFA stuff came into sort of the spotlight a bit. The last CBA negotiations of 2021-2022. And there was a discussion about compensation picks and the draft and figuring something, you know, IFA and trying to figure something out, turned into a draft, which the players don't want. And I understand that because a lot of the top line players, this is life-changing money, right? So of course they don't want that to turn into a draft where players aren't going to get that kind of, probably not going to get that kind of life-changing money, although top picks would, but again, every team has the same pool, so every team can give, you know, their top couple picks life-changing money in that way. And in theory, this is pro-worker, right? I mean, I'm a fan of the NWSL, and there's a lot of debate about getting rid of the draft and just allowing players to sign straight out of high school. Just sign. No draft, just sign. So in theory, the players having complete control over their future, where they go, what money, you know, what the terms are. In theory, that works. But the thing is that's different about this is the NWSL player draft or whatever, is typically people who are 18, 17, 18. These teams in the MLB are negotiating these deals with these players and whoever their representation is. These kids are 12, 13. So what's happening is they're getting sort of verbally locked into these contracts, but nothing's in writing yet because it's not legal. So what happens now is the team can back out. If anything goes wrong, kid gets hurt, whatever, the team can back out, but the kid can't, because the kid's not going to back out of, you know, even for even $100,000 is life-changing money at this point. This system that should, in theory, work for the players does not, because you're doing this with children. So instead, if you had a draft of these kids when, okay, this class is 16, so they all can sign now. Instead of that, okay, this class is 16, they all can get into the draft now. And the next group of 16-year-olds will be next year's draft or whatever. However they would set that up, that would be better in this situation, because you wouldn't have teams backing out of this or being able to control things in this way, you know, and ruin these kids' lives, because these kids now are being told, well, we're going to sign you at 16, but, you know, we think you're going to be a real good player, so keep improving. These kids drop out of school so they can focus on baseball. That's bad in so many ways. I shouldn't even have to explain why that's bad. You know, obviously, everyone should get a good education. But also, you're essentially now these kids are dropping out of school to work a job that isn't paying them yet, unless they're doing stuff under the table. So, yeah, I don't really pay attention to the IFA. You know, is it cool to see the Mets sign the number 6 overall prospect? Yes. But as soon as you start thinking about it, it gets a lot less cool and gets a lot more upsetting. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Again, I don't know anything about any of these players. I don't keep up with this stuff. You know, that's even a little too much for me. So now to get into the Mets stuff. As I mentioned, the Mets, it was arbitration deal week. The Mets avoided arbitration with 6 of the 7 players that were arbitration eligible, Pete Alonso, Drew Smith, Joey Lucchese, Adrian Hauser, David Peterson, and Tyrone Taylor, all came to terms with the team. Alonso had one of the biggest numbers of the day. He got $20.5 million for next year. He had the biggest number until, of course, Juan Soto, and then Juan Soto cleared him, obviously, $31 million. The only player the Mets need to go to arbitration with now is Phil Bickford. I just want to pull up those numbers right now, because if I remember correctly, it's not huge. It's not tiny. I'm describing something that is like, so like, you know, how tall is he? Yeah, he's average height, average size, you know, like, that's great. Thanks for telling me it wasn't gigantic, but also wasn't tiny. Wow, I can't spell arbitration. That's why nothing's coming up. Wow. There you go. Let's see. 22 players facing hearings. Pretty good. The Mets only had 1. We're almost there. Great radio. The difference is $85,000, which is comparatively small. He requested $900,000. The Mets offered $815,000. I believe the smallest one, or at least one of the smallest one, was Casey Mize, whom the Tigers offered $815,000, and he requested $840,000. That's literally $25,000. And someone pointed this out, when he drafted, he signed under slot, so they've already saved money on him. And now they're trying to nickel and dime him for literally $25,000, which, again, these teams are worth billions of dollars. They're nickel and diming him over $25,000. The Orioles are doing something like that, too, with, I mean, Jacob Webb, it's $775,000. It's just, it's so stupid to me to nickel and dime over that much. You know, but of course, there's still time. Teams could come up with whatever. But at most, the Mets need one trial with Bickford. News sort of came out in drips and drabs, little rumors here and there that the Mets are potentially in on Jorge Soler and Blake Snell. They're fine players, and I wouldn't – they're not bad. Like, I think Snell is probably, after Yamamoto, the best pitcher in this class. I guess I'm just confused. Why would the Mets at this point do anything big this year – in the way of Snell? Soler, I could see working out a contract close to something similar to Minaya, right? Where it's 2 or 3 years with an opt-out after the first year. So if he really goes crazy next year, he can go and sign a better deal. With Snell, you know, and I was listening, you know, he could have an opt-out too, whatever. But why do anything that big when, like, Snell comparatively is like, he's good, obviously. He has two Cy Youngs. But when you look at the options that are available next year, and now you're saying, okay, if he isn't great this year, because the thing is with Snell is that when he doesn't win a Cy Young, he doesn't tend to have the best season. It's not like he's constantly up there. You know, even so this year, he walks a lot of guys, a lot of stuff all over the place. Why lock yourself into this with Snell when you could wait till next year and sign Corbin Burns, or if he proves himself to be healthy this year, sign Walker Buehler, or sign Max Fried. I mean, there's a lot of great names on the market, and at the very least, I'm pretty sure Corbin Burns won't sign an extension. He's probably going to hit free agency. I don't know about the other two. I think of Buehler and Fried, I'd be more surprised if Fried signed an extension, just given the way that I feel like there's like a low-key bad vibe between Fried and the Braves, but again, there's so many options next year. Why would you potentially lock yourself into Snell being your de facto number two when you don't have to, you know? Especially if this season isn't going to be we're going all in year. You're taking a step back. You're going to try and drop down below maybe a luxury tax thing or two. Why add what? I mean, he says he's looking for 8-240, which I'm sure he is. Why lock yourself into that? Anything close to that for Blake Snell? It just seems like something that will, you know, and again, that contract is going to age better than I'm sure Jordan Montgomery or whoever else. But why? Don't just make the move to make the move. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I wouldn't. A report came out this week about Ronnie Mauricio. sorry, I still have a little bit of a lingering cough. Being advised not to play Winter League this year, Dominican Winter League by the Mets, but that he had to do so due to financial difficulties that someone in his inner circle, management or whatever, mishandled his money from his signing bonus, so he was, you know, he was sort of forced into it financially. He's come out and said that that's not true. But, like, of course he would. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't be shocked about this, right? Because you see this happen with plenty of people across plenty of industries. People are always trying to get in there and get their buck, you know, make their money off someone else, right? And it sucks. And the thing is that there's really, I'm not going to ask him not to do it, but if he's going to make the money doing that, he can't say no to it if he needs the money. Because, you know, he's in the majors for a month last year. He's hurt this year. He's going to be gone most likely the entire year. And they can't pay him not to do it, because that, again, that becomes payroll. You cannot pay someone in the off season not to play one of these other leagues. It's actually a by rule. So it sucks for him if that's true, and that's, you know, and that he, if he needed to do that. And again, when you create this situation where this, these kids now are being given this money at 16, and someone they trust says, well, let me handle it for you, instead of, okay, we drafted them and they get a signing, but like, whatever, there needs to be safeguards in place here for instead of just handing a 16-year-old $3.5 million, you know, saying thank you very much to see you in a few months. You know, it's just, it sucks. And it's, again, it's exploitation of these kids from all around. It sucks for him. And then finally, I just want to say really quick, this week, Buddy Harrelson died. Buddy Harrelson was, it, in a way, I think what's really sad about this is I don't think he's just former Met, right? Because plenty of old baseball players pass and they're former Mets, right? He, in a way, was so synonymous with the Mets. He was a Miracle Met from 69. He was a coach of the Mets in 86. He managed them in the early 90s. He was with the Mets during the 73 run, too. I mean, there was that very famous moment during the NLCS in 73 when Bud Harrelson and Pete Rose got into a fight on the field. There's something about Buddy Harrelson that's so synonymous with the Mets and, frankly, with New York sports. I mean, he owned the Long Island Ducks. He was their manager for a time. And he seemed so omnipresent in a way too for a lot of Mets history. You know, I remember going to a Ducks game and it was like through a company my dad worked for, they'd gotten the tickets, whatever. And there was like access to one of like the clubs in the stadium or the club in the stadium. Cause it is a small stadium. And at one point he just walked through the club. My dad was like, oh, that's Buddy Harrelson. And it was just, he was synonymous, but he was accessible, right? Because a lot of legends for these teams don't always stick around in the area that long after. I mean, or that publicly facing. I mean, hell, David Wright. David Wright's synonymous with the Mets. You say David Wright, you think orange and blue, but he's in California full time. And that's obviously his right. He lives there. His family's there. But Buddy Harrelson was just here. And he was he was a guy. He was, oh my God, he's Buddy Harrelson. He was an all-star. And it's just, it's sad to see players of that generation go. In the same way it's sad to see anyone from older generations go, because in a way we're losing history too, you know? So yeah, it's sad, you know, someone who's so Mets through and through, despite playing for other teams, you know, he's a Met. He'll always be a Met in that way that, like, people will always associate blue and orange with him, which I think is pretty cool. And hopefully this season they do some cool stuff. You know, maybe I'm sure they'll have a nice little tribute to him opening day, and maybe they'll do a little arm patch or something like that for him. You know, he's not Gary Carter or Tom Seaver, but I think he still deserves that respect. Yeah, so let's take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about a few notable stories that I've not been able to talk about a ton in the last month because I have been ill.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
All right, and we're back. So the two stories I want to touch on have sort of been percolating since early mid last year, but they sort of had a resurgence in the last month due to new updates and stuff like that. One of which is baseball, one isn't. So I'm going to do the baseball one first and then the non-baseball one because I just feel like it'll flow better that way from just talking about baseball before. The Wander Franco story has cropped back up. And when we talked about this originally, and this has gone back months, this is going back when we had two hosts. It was a lot of like, well, you know, no one knows what's going on here. You hope it didn't happen, but didn't look particularly good. And every new piece of information since then has just gotten worse and worse in a way that's upsetting and concerning. Not that any way it would be worse and worse wouldn't be upsetting and concerning, but like, it's like feels really bad, right? Feels really bad to read every single thing that, like, every update that comes out about this is bad, you know? So a few weeks ago, they were apparently going to the places that he would be known to be frequenting, his house, his properties, to try and get him to appear for questioning or whatever. And he just was nowhere to be found, which sort of led to this vibe of like, is he on the run? But then the following week he appeared, they interviewed him for hours, they booked him, released him on bail, which was entirely related to the not appearing. This wasn't them arresting him for the alleged crimes. It was all related to, you know, procedural stuff. So he's being investigated for the abuse, the exploitation, and also for money laundering, which the 14-year-old girl's mother is also being investigated for exploitation, money laundering, because apparently the belief now is that there was sort of this, I don't want to use the word scheme because it makes it sound like they got in a room and you know, had like a map and stuff like that, but basically to keep everything running smoothly, he would pay off the girl's mother, and the girl's mother was amenable to this because she was getting money and land and, you know, cars and stuff like that. And again, there's a lot of reports here that I don't quite know where they're coming from, so I'm trying not to use anything that I just read. Hector Gomez on Twitter is really good because he tends to retweet other news sources and Dominican Republic and Spanish news sources and translate them. So that way you get a vibe of what's going on there instead of just like people posting stuff and like there's no source. But yeah, that's really bad. You know, there's no way that's good, but that's like, you know, it sucks. This is not what you want. The attention, this is not what you want to happen in any circumstance. And, you know, this is a guy who seemed to have it made. He was great. He was having his best year. But when you sexually abuse and exploit minors, like, I personally don't think it matters how good you are at something. You should be held accountable, which is why I can't stand ever having to see Roman Polanski or Woody Allen's faces. You know, you need to be held accountable. You can't just be exonerated by what you're good at. So Ken Rosenthal wrote a really ridiculous article that went viral for being so terrible, that basically the thesis of the article was essentially teams, be careful if you sign younger players because they could be a long-term risk, which is like, and then he compared him to Fernando Tatis Jr., and the motorcycle accidents and the steroid stuff, which, like, the steroid stuff is bad. I'm not going to say the steroid stuff is good. But there's a real big difference between, like, oh, young players, like getting into a bunch of motorcycle accidents at age 21 is, like, doing dumbass 21 things. And using steroids is still kind of, like, well, I think I get away with this. Like, you know, like, dumbass 21-year-old things, you know, and he was punished accordingly for that. Like, I don't think that, like, sexually abusing and exploiting a minor and money laundering in relation to this. I think that's just like dumbass 21-year-old things. I think that's like a character flaw. And to say the team should maybe not pay their players as much as they should, because there's a chance that their players could turn out to either be dumbass 21-year-olds or sexual deviants and criminals is interesting framing. But yeah, that was bizarre, and I think that article is still up, which is really funny to me, because it was so bad. I read it. I was like, man, well, the headline was terrible, and I was like, maybe there's a point in here, like one good point. I don't think there was a single good point in the entire article. It was bad. But yeah, that's the Wander Franco stuff, obviously. If anything new, this is sort of going a little slow, obviously, which also is probably not great for what has happened within the case, just because like that means that there's a lot of stuff they gotta get through. But as it evolves, I'll talk about it periodically when there's new stuff to cover. But I figured it was good to just sort of get that out of the way, since I would have covered that had I been around for 4 weeks and not trying not to haggle along. And then the other one I want to talk about is similar, in the same vein as in the same arena, but not the same thing. Jonathan Majors, and I don't think we've talked about this yet on this show, because there's been a lot of stuff has happened. Jonathan Majors was arrested and tried for assaulting his ex-girlfriend. And this was a really interesting case of just absolutely believing yourself. Like this was like pure toxic narcissism actually sinking someone in real time. So he was in a car with his girlfriend. I'm trying to remember all the facts, because there's like a bunch of different stuff here, but he was in the car with his girlfriend and he was texting someone, and she suspected that he was texting another woman, so she reached out and grabbed his phone, and then this devolved into him hitting her. Video came out of him hopping out of the car and running away, and you know, whatever else. He's been found guilty of one count of reckless assault, and then I think a separate thing of harassment that isn't like a felony. He's gonna be sentenced early next month, but this is the kind of thing that, and like, not to be crass or like very, I'm trying to think of the right word to use here. Like procedural about it, or you know, mercenary or anything like that. But like realistically, if he had just shut the fuck up and gone away and like let everything die down, he is, and it sucks that this is the way that our justice system works, but he is successful enough and credible enough that if he had somewhat did like a small mea culpa, whatever, probably could have pled a lot of this down, wouldn't be looking at jail time, and probably could have gone on a pretty successful redemption tour. You know, make a small indie movie and say, you know, I did a lot of stuff I wasn't proud of, but I've changed. Right? He could have done that, like, total bullshit move. But instead, this man is one of the most blatant and gigantic narcissists I've ever witnessed, which is really saying something, because he's in Hollywood. And I don't think it's unrealistic to say that a lot of people in Hollywood probably have some amount of narcissism, right? Like, you have to believe that you're that good and to make it in that industry without being, like, devastated constantly from people telling you no and that you're not good enough. Like, everyone's got to have a little bit of, like, an arrogance and an unchecked narcissism and everything like that. But his has gotten so toxic. And so, him and his lawyers were doing really wacky stuff where they were just saying things that weren't true. Like, not even, like, oh, like, a he said, she said thing. But, like, factual stuff where they were like, well, the woman recanted and actually she's been arrested. Which never even happened. And people believed it, which was the, like, this is, like, the worst case scenario of, like, total media literacy going in the toilet lately. Is like, they were just saying stuff that you can fact check easily. Like, people were fact checking them and saying, this is not true, nothing of the sort has happened, why are you saying this? And people were still like, he's innocent, she got arrested, like, really weird stuff. There was a recording that came out of him talking to the ex-girlfriend. Well, talking, yelling at the ex-girlfriend about how he is an important man and that he's like, I can't believe I'm going to say this. It's one of those things that, like, if you can stomach it, go listen to this because it's so ridiculous that it's almost funny. Like, you're almost like, no way, no way he's saying this. He says something to the effect of, I'm like Martin Luther King Jr. or Barack Obama, and I need you to be my Coretta Scott King or my Michelle. His ex-girlfriend's white, first of all, which is the, like, most ridiculous part of that. It's like, I need you to be my Coretta, and you're, like, a white lady who's, like, a script supervisor. And also, you, sir, have been in, like, 3 good movies, right? And I'm saying this as someone who has enjoyed his work in the past. I'm not gonna lie and say that I didn't. I'm not gonna lie and act like I wasn't blown away by The Last Black Man in San Francisco or anything, you know. Like, I liked his work. I was excited to see him sort of get this chance and to sort of start blowing up. But, sir, you are an actor who you were about to make your next turn be, like, 7 movies in a Marvel as the villain. You are not Barack Obama or Martin Luther King Jr. It just, like, bananas stuff like that. And he's also been accused pretty credibly of being an abusive presence on set, which is something that really makes me mad. I was talking about this with a coworker the other day. Like, obviously, abusing, domestic violence, anything like that is the worst, right? But, like, being abusive on set or doing anything like that on set is something that makes me genuinely mad because sets are fun. Like, you're on set, you're playing make-believe, you're solving problems. It's like summer camp in a way. You're there with your friends. You're having a good time. And now all of a sudden, this guy who thinks that he's the next coming of Medgar Evers or whatever is over here yelling and screaming at you because, like, you're doing something that isn't working for his bananas way of doing stuff. Just, it rubs me the wrong way. But he's going on this redemption tour, or trying to, between the end of the court case and the sentencing. So he did a little interview on ABC, and I can't believe he did this. The clips of it are, like, again, ridiculous. It feels like a satire. It feels like a satire of what would happen in this situation. Like, Tina Fey wrote it for 30 Rock. That's how crazy this is. He's dating Megan Good right now, right? And he's going to court with his little, like, he wears the most ridiculous outfits. He's always carrying this cup. He's so ridiculous. He's so, like, up his own ass. But he's on this redemption press tour and he's doing the interview. And someone goes, you know, the interviewer is like, well, you know, you're dating your girlfriend, Megan Good. And she's in the room. And he goes, yeah, you know, she's my, he takes a pause, and he decides he's still gotta say it, she's my Coretta. Bro, you have one line, and it's not even a good line. Like, I've never, you know, he's so narcissistic to the point that I almost can't believe it. It's too much even for the industry he's in. But anyway, he gets sentenced on February 6th. So when that happens, I will revisit this story. Because I am sure there's going to be some wackiness with that too. But until then, let me take a break. And when I come back, we'll do a little movie minute.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. And we're back. So this week, I'm recording this on Tuesday, January 16th. So a week from today is one of my favorite days of the year. Oscar nomination day is the 23rd. So next week, I'm not going to record until after the nominations. I'm going to record Tuesday afternoon or evening or whatever. Because I want to, I might actually wait till that night. Cause I think that's the day of the Hall of Fame results too. And I would like to cover that the same day. So I'm going to wait to record that day so I can get the Oscar nominations. Cause I'm going to want to give recommendations and talk about them. And my 2023 top 10, I'll do a segment on the show. I'll do it around the time of the Oscars. Once I've seen pretty much everything, I'll feel like I can sing. But yeah, this is very exciting. We just had the Critics' Choice Awards and the Emmys, which I'm not the world's biggest TV person, but I still enjoy watching them. And yeah, this Oscar season is funny because it's not actually exciting. Because I gotta stop recording these this late at night. It's not like there's gonna be a ton of shocks, although there might be. I mean, last year Andrea Riseborough got nominated for Two Leslie, and it was 7 a.m. and I laughed so hard that I think I woke up people. Like I was having a good time with that one. So obviously there are surprises that would come, but I feel like even the biggest surprise that I could predict, which I think is probably, Penelope Cruz in Ferrari, who I am predicting because I think they just love her so much. And I just saw that movie. It was phenomenal. Even that's like kind of, you can see it, unlike the last Penelope Cruz nomination for Parallel Mothers kind of came out of nowhere, which is another great movie. I'm a big Penelope Cruz fan. But yeah, it's a very staid year. I will say this, I am have my predictions, and I'll pull them up so that way I can sort of just touch on them a little bit. So my predictions for, oh my god, I'm looking at my predictions from November. And, oh, I was such an idiot. I in November, I thought Rachel McAdams was going to make it. That was so cute. I would love it if she made it. That would be my favorite nomination of the day if she makes it. But it's very the same things over and over again. So, you know, basically my predictions, I have Poor Things and Oppenheimer tying at 12 nominations, although I could see Poor Things dropping someone somewhere. I have Killers of the Flower Moon getting 11. Actually, Barbie only getting 8, which kind of feels wrong, but also kind of feels right. I think my biggest surprised and I'm predicting, and I want you to hear it here first, so that way you aren't that surprised by it. And I am saying this as someone who worships the ground that Greta Gerwig walks on, and Lady Bird is my favorite movie ever, and I think she did a phenomenal job with Barbie. I think she misses for director. I think people are going to get really mad, but they do this. The director's branch loves snubbing a big name with, and I'm not going to say loves doing it, but I think that there's sort of this feeling like the big money makers in that way, like, they sometimes like to sneak in a smaller movie. I personally, and some people probably think I'm crazy for this, I personally have, I still have a woman in the lineup. I have Justine Triet, who directed Anatomy of a Fall, which I have not recommended yet because I'm holding on to that one because I know it's going to get a couple Oscar nominations next week, and I want to recommend it then. So do not watch it until I recommend it to you. You can do whatever you want. You can watch it now. It's great. Watch it whenever. But it's not an official recommendation until next week. But I have her getting in, and have Jonathan Glazer getting in. And yeah, I think this is going to be a very low-key but fun Oscars. Like, Robert Downey Jr. probably just sweeps the season, and he's given great speeches, and Devine, Joy Randolph, which I found out last week, that's actually how you pronounce it. It's not Devine, it's Devine, Joy Randolph, is literally sweeping everything, and she's so good in that movie. And Lily Gladstone, Emma Stone is turning into a race, which is fun. Kind of looks like actors between Cillian Murphy and Paul Giamatti, which I actually love. And if Paul Giamatti wins back to Best Actor, I am going to have an emotional breakdown because I get so emotional seeing that man, because every time I see him, I hear the last name Giamatti, and I think of his father, Bart, and Bart was very, very close with my grandfather, and then I think of my grandfather, and I loved my grandfather so much. So if he gets nominated and it looks like he's going to win, I might break out the copy of Faye Vincent's book that we have in the house, where Faye Vincent wrote about my grandfather and his relationship with Giamatti. And Bart, not Paul. And, yeah, I'll give a few passages from that. That'll be, like, a fun little thing. But, yeah, I mean, this is looking like a very, it's a good Oscars this year. Like, my Best Picture lineup, I haven't seen all of them. There's two movies I have currently getting in for Best Picture that I have not seen. I'm hoping to see at least one of them before the nominations get out next week. So the two, my Best Picture lineup I have, I'll run through them really quick. How far are we into this episode? I got time. I've got Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Barbie, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Zone of Interest, Past Lives, Maestro, and American Fiction. I don't have them alphabetized there, but generally, that's just the PGA 10. If any of them miss, I think if anything in that lineup misses, it's either Maestro or Past Lives. And I think that the next movie that gets in is May, December. I have May, December getting in for screenplay and actor. And I think that combo is good enough to make it 11. That movie should be getting more nominations. Like Natalie Portman should be nominated. Julianne Moore should be nominated. Everything about that movie should get nominated. It's so brilliant. Todd Haynes should be nominated. But I have Nolan, Scorsese, Lanthimos, Triet, Jonathan Glazer getting in for director. This is like a god-tier lineup. Like, Best Picture, other than Maestro's, and the two I haven't seen, like, the other ones I've seen, the lowest rating I've given to any of them is a 4.5. I think this is an exceptional lineup. Maestro is not great. I do not love that movie. And again, we have a lot of time between now and the Oscars. I can get into that at some point. I just don't love it. For actor, I have Cillian Murphy, Bradley Cooper, Paul Giamatti, Colman Domingo, Jeffrey Wright. I think Leonardo DiCaprio misses, which is upsetting to me, because I think that's his best performance, but he's just not. The movie is all about Lily Gladstone, right? Like, that's kind of what the vibe is right now. It's like, Lily Gladstone rocks. And, like, I agree, obviously. So, I think that he has sort of made the decision to not campaign as much and to sort of throw his weight behind basically being there, you know, on the red carpet with Lily and in interviews with Lily and stuff like that. He sort of spent a lot of time lifting her up in a way that he hasn't done with a lot of other co-stars, but also he has a lot of, most of his other co-stars in recent years have been very established people. Like, he didn't need to do that for Brad Pitt. But, like, Lily Gladstone, again, I've loved Lily Gladstone for years, but this is Lily Gladstone's big industry coming out party, you know, so it's great. I hope she wins. I have her, Emma Stone, which I just saw Poor Things last week with my best friend James. Fantastic movie. She's great in it. Any other year, I'd be, you know, really banging the drum for her. Sandra Hüller, I have getting in, which I think that's my second favorite of this bunch, honestly. Like, this is, again, it's a great actress lineup. I have Greta Lee and Carey Mulligan. I have Margot missing, which I could be wrong about. Margot, could it get in there? I think if Margot gets in, Greta Lee gets bumped. But, again, I love Carey Mulligan so much. I don't think she should be nominated. I don't think Maestro is very good. And so I think everything suffers from the fact that the screenplay for that movie is not very good. Supporting actor, I have Downey, Gosling, Charles Melton, Mark Ruffalo, and Robert De Niro, which I know a lot of people have sort of shied away from Charles Melton. He missed SAG, he missed BAFTA. I do still think there's enough support for him to get in. I wouldn't be surprised if he misses, but I'm predicting him in. And supporting actress, I have Randolph, Danielle Brooks, Emily Blunt, Jodie Foster, Penelope Cruz. I think this is a really interesting lineup. I think the first three I listed are really secure. I think Foster gets in with like I think that's as close to secure as you can get, which is like, Not Yet is not a good movie. I think it's worse than Maestro, right? But like, she's good in it, and I just love Jodie Foster. I'm not upset to get her nominated for another Oscar, because here's what I want. I want Jodie Foster. Start being in more movies again. Start making more movies again. I want her back. She is great. So, all for it. And again, Penelope Cruz, fantastic. Every Oscar nomination you can give Penelope Cruz. If that's the lineup, I haven't seen Color Purple. I'm hoping to see that on Thursday. Not going to be mad about that. So, you know, again, those are my top line predictions. I'll probably post my full predictions on my Twitter account, which is my personal one, is at odguitar. I'll probably post that the night before Oscar nominations, because I presume we're getting the BAFTA nominations are coming out this week, so something might change between now and then for me, and you know, obviously the other guilds and stuff like that. I want to take one list, look over my texts. But yeah, I feel like my top line stuff probably doesn't change, but it's going to be a fun year. Where are we at? Perfect. All right. We're gonna come in quick with this movie minute. It's going to be a legit minute, maybe. Probably not. I forgot that was what I was recommending. My movie minute is this movie I saw this weekend with my dad called, and you might have heard of it, The Iron Claw. This movie, it's a fair warning. If you're going into this movie, if you don't want to do the research to know everything that happens, like if you want to go in blind, which I just literally could not do because I spent a lifetime listening to my dad tell me stories about the Monarchs. But if you want to go in blind, I would just say steel yourself, like get ready. The first half, fun, you know, drama, but fun. The second half will rip your heart out, throw it on the ground, stomp on it, get in a tractor trailer, drive over it, back up over it, drive over it again. I had to hold back heaving sobs at the end of this movie. Zac Efron is operating at levels I didn't even know he had in him. And Jeremy Allen White is great in it. Harris Dickinson, fantastic. I love Harris Dickinson. Beach Rats is great. I have to watch Scrapper, which I haven't seen, but I've heard so many good things about. Holt McCallany is great in it. Maura Tierney. Lily James. I love Lily James. She's so good in this. She has a really good American accent. Props to her for that. But yeah, it's devastating. It's a look at, like, myth-making and the drive to be, like, the great American something. And the way that, like, refusing to acknowledge and refusing to deal with trauma ends up just demolishing not just you, but everyone around you. It's just, it's great. Fantastic. So that's my movie minute. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully next week there's a little more baseball news to talk about, but even if there isn't, there'll be some movie news to talk about. You can follow the show on Twitter at FIBpod. You can follow us on Instagram at FlushingIsBurningPod. You can email us at FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. If you like the show, I assume you listen to the other shows at Homer and Applesauce, because it doesn't make logistical sense to me that you would just be listening to this one and, like, not checking out the other shows. But if you don't, I would check out the other shows, A Pod of Their Own, From Complex to Queens, Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. And if you like just this one, all those shows, you can go to homerunapplesauce.com. There's a link there to the Patreon. Go to Patreon, you pay $5 a month, you get access to exclusive shows, playlists, I think we do merch. There's a whole list of stuff. They show it on there. And you can sort of scroll through that. Yeah, that money helps keep the metaphorical lights on. Yeah, so thank you so much.